Oh, the internet. It is my friend. Seriously, on some occasions I can order Chinese food. That's good. The internet, it is my nemesis. It can control me, mostly the smartphone, right? And it can be my enemy, too. It can steal from me. But I shall fear not, for I can learn and grow and equip myself and protect myself and my passwords and the pictures of me as a two-year-old in the bathtub. I can do that. October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And on this month's Fraud Watch Friday, yes, we get cyber secure with AARP Al Ward and FBI Special Agent Casey Harrington today on Voices of Montana. I'm glad to have you here. Tom Schultz alongside as we welcome Al Ward in studio. Good to see you, Al. How you doing?
Good to see you. How are you these days?
You know, I'm hanging in there.
You've got through the hot weather and the fires and stuff, and hopefully the fires will be gone pretty soon.
Just in time for the cold weather and the ice and all that, yeah.
My favorite time of year.
It is. Okay. I don't mind it, too. I love all the four seasons. We just get to live it all up here in Montana. That's real cool. Got a real important topic here today, and there's a topic, Al, that really just there's no boundary to it when you talk about cybersecurity.
No, unfortunately. And one of the things that I think is so important about the topic cybersecurity is so many people, you know, get their computers, learn how to get on the internet, and then don't do anything with the security software that they have. They don't update their programs. And those kind of things lead to real problems for them.
Real trouble. A Special Agent Casey Harrington with the FBI is with us. He's a current supervisor of the Cyber Task Force in the FBI's Salt Lake City office there. And that's Utah, Idaho, and Montana responsibilities. And good morning, Special Agent Harrington. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
So how long has the internet been your friend and your nemesis and your enemy?
So I've been with the FBI for almost 16 years now, and I've worked cyber those entire 16 years. So I've been working on this for a while, but certainly I've been on the internet for years before that, you know, in college and everything else. So it's something I've been working on for a while.
So through those number of years, when did, as Al kind of said here earlier, when did people start really, really, really taking it seriously? The security aspect of it.
Unfortunately, not early enough. Mm-hmm. You know, the way it was originally built, it was for, you know, it was open and it was for sharing, is more for academic purposes, and that's kind of led to some of the issues we see today, where security wasn't really a feature that was built in to the way the internet and these networks work, and so we've been playing catch up ever since. But you know, as long as you know, since the early 2000s, as long as the internet, the World Wide Web as we know it, has been around, there's been criminal activity going on it, and it's really come to the forefront in the past few years with ransomware and some of these other attacks making headlines.
Al Ward is with us here in studio as well, AARP state president for the state of Montana. Just got handed a copy of his book, Outsmart Crime. Holds a master's degree in adult education. I kind of forget sometimes, you know, your career in law enforcement, and I want to mention it. Make sure I do mention it every now and again, because you've been taking a bite out of crime for a while too.
You know, and one of the things that's been interesting to me is that I've watched, because I was in law enforcement a long time ago. I've been out of law enforcement longer than I was in it. But the bottom line is fraud has been with us forever. As a matter of fact, I remember when I was in high school, I saw a movie with George C. Scott called The Flim Flam Man.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically, nothing really has changed except the platforms that people use to defraud people. And that's where people like Special Agent Harrison come in. Harrington come in because they are on the forefront of what the new things are, because the basic pitches are the same, but they're different.
Casey, is that the case? Is the Flim Flam Man just have a new suit on, or has this he or she also educated themselves and are coming up with new ways to defraud us?
Well, yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the criminals go where the money is, right, and where they can get it easiest and the most of it. So, you know, if you think about it, if you want to rob a bank, you're taking a big risk, right? You could get shot, you could get injured. There's severe penalties for it, and maybe if you do rob a bank, you get a couple $1,000s. If you rob a bank or multiple bank customers online, you can get millions of dollars, and you can do it from the other side of the world. So the risk is much, much less. So the criminals know this. They've kind of transitioned to this type of activity, and that's where we find ourselves.
How much of a problem is it that these rules and regulations vary greatly, where you can get away with some things because there are no regulations in Nigeria or whatever country we want to pick on?
Yeah, and yeah, that's the other aspect that's very difficult is, you know, these crimes, you know, take place across the world, so that, you know, the victim may be here in the U.S., the subject in another country, and the infrastructure, the servers and other devices they use to carry out the crime can be located all over the world, and we've got to work with each of those countries' law enforcement agencies to obtain the evidence we need. So it's not like a bank robbery where you go to the bank and there's fingerprints and there's video and everything's right there local. This is a worldwide investigation. So it certainly complicates our ability to investigate and gather evidence.
And you've done your fair share of that when you talk about investigating local, state, and even crimes that have national security interests. Special Agent Casey Harrington is with us from the FBI Salt Lake City office, supervisor of the Cyber Task Force. We'll get more into it. It's Fraud Watch Friday with AARP, Al Ward in Studio 2, on internet fraud and new e-scam warnings and some other tips like that. But I'm curious, Casey, about how long or how dramatic does a crime need to be before it comes to your guys' office and you begin to pursue it with everything you have?
Well, we get a variety of complaints every single day, and so many so that we've set up the Internet Crime Complaint Center, ic3.gov, as kind of a one-point location where people can go to kind of report some of these crimes. And we use that to look at the trends and see what's going on and really focus our efforts based on what's reported there. Certainly, we've seen a big increase in ransomware, business email compromise, another kind of network and computer intrusion activity. But the overwhelming numbers, you know, we have to focus on the highest priority and the biggest threats now. We're really, you know, unable to go after every single complaint that comes in.
Is there a centralized organization or a handful of centralized organizations? Are there, in terms of prosecuting and investigating, is it just many, 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 many small little organizations? How are they connected in that regard?
So from the FBI's perspective, we've set up cyber task forces in each of our 56 field offices. And these are modeled after the joint terrorism task forces that were set up, you know, 20 years ago to fight terrorism. We kind of took that model and applied it in each of our field offices to combat cybercrime. So we work with our state and local partners and other federal partners to, you know, use each other's authorities, capabilities, and resources to have the biggest impact we can against cybercrime. And, you know, that's really the model we've taken to approach it.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed, because I work a lot with the Federal Trade Commission, and I know that those guys and some of the people from the Department of Justice here in Montana are actually working closely with the Canadians. Is that happening across the board? I mean, I know that there's Interpol that does things, but, you know, I hear every once in a while of some kind of a big sting that goes on where a lot of these organizations come together and, you know, go in with another country and deal with some of the problems that they have. Is that happening uniformly or is it sporadic?
No, it's almost more often than not. You know, I struggle to think of an investigation we've done where we haven't worked with a foreign partner. You know, as I mentioned before, so many of these crimes, the evidence is located all over the world. The subjects are usually located outside the U.S. So almost everything we do now involves coordinating with a foreign law enforcement. And there's Europol, there's Interpol, there's other organizations set up to kind of do this. We have our legal attachés, which are FBI agents who are stationed all throughout the world to help facilitate those investigations. So, an international investigation is more the norm than not.
Has the number of scam-friendly countries been reduced?
I don't know if the number of countries has been reduced. It's probably the opposite. I think it's probably gone up because people see the amount of money that can be made. You know, if you look at the headlines recently, you know, the amounts that are being paid for some of these ransomware scams are in the millions. You know, overall losses are in the billions. Those are big numbers, and criminals see that, and they go after that. So, you know, we've seen an increase in the number of criminal organizations that are doing this type of activity.
Yeah, go ahead.
That brings up a question that I have, because when I was with Bellevue Police in Washington, one of the things that I did is I worked with our banks, and I did robbery training and fraud training and that sort of thing. And one of the things that we always told them was not to tell people how much they lost. And yet, I see every day almost in the press where somebody lost $1 million. I mean, that's a big red flag to somebody who's looking for money.
Yeah, I agree. That it certainly doesn't help. And, you know, these ransomware attacks, when they first started, the losses were in the thousands of dollars, $10,000. It wasn't a big deal. But as more and more criminals got into this, and as after they went after bigger and bigger companies, those numbers started going up, and those numbers started getting reported. And like you said, when people see those headlines and see, you know, $1 million, $10 million, $15 million being paid, that's going to draw some attention, and that's going to just bring more people, you know, into it. So, you know, we certainly advocate not paying, because it just emboldens the criminals to do more of this. But they're, you know, there's certainly situations where organizations are almost forced to pay. We've seen, you know, hospitals. Mm-hmm. And schools and police departments get hit, and they're unable to do anything, you know, unless they pay and get access back to that network. So our top priority at this point is ransomware.
If they pay, do they have situations where somebody else comes back on them?
Yeah, so, you know, that's part of the other problem with paying is, you know, you're not dealing with an honest broker, right, on the other side. If you negotiate a price and pay to get access back to your network, we've seen these criminals come back and say, okay, well, you paid your money, but now my boss wants another $10,000 or whatever it is. Or they say, okay, well, we've also stolen some of your information and we'll leak it if you don't pay us extra money. Or, you know, there's nothing to say they won't come back 6 months or a year from now and say, hey, you know, we still have your information, pay us more money. So
FBI,
it's another reason.
FBI Special Agent Casey Harrington is with us. Al Ward in studio. It's AARP's Fraud Watch Friday. Cybersecurity. Back with more on Voices.
Hi, we're the Oak Ridge Boys.
Scammers steal billions of dollars from unsuspecting people every year.
We are working with AARP's Fraud Watch Network and the Department of Justice to keep you from being a victim of fraud.
They have vital information for you.
They will help you get in touch with folks that fight fraud every day.
Go to AARP.org/FraudWatchNetwork.
And don't let it get the best of you, huh? Don't let it beat you. The internet, that can be applied in a lot of ways. Right now, we're talking about cybersecurity, and mostly it's our money, but also our personal information that relates. And scammers, I don't know. I hate to say it, but I gotta hand it to them sometimes, because they are relentless and they are creative, and they're after you. Welcome back. It's Fraud Watch Friday with Al Ward in studio, Montana's AARP state president, also special agent from the FBI's Salt Lake City office. He's the supervisor of the Cyber Task Force, Casey Harrington. A lot of interesting stuff to explore here. A good internet safety tip sheet that can be found on the FBI's website. It's FBI.gov, and you can just search scams and safety on the internet. And also, as Casey had mentioned here, there is an FBI Internet Crime Complaint Center. He called it IC3, and that's good to remember. The letter I, the letter C, the number 3.gov to report these crimes, because that's how the investigations begin, and that's how the bad guys are caught, by informing the FBI of what they're doing there. Casey, appreciate your time here. Want to go right into, more about ransomware, because maybe that is a term, as you were saying, indicating earlier, that we don't fully understand. What is it from your viewpoint?
Yeah, it's certainly something that's, you know, been in the headlines the past year or two, and it sounds scary, but it's really just individuals, criminals getting access to a network and encrypting file so that the owner of the network loses access to those files and basically loses functionality or the ability to use the network. So it's nothing really new. It's been around for 15 years or so. Initially, the individuals doing ransomware were going after home computers. So they would get onto someone's home computer and they would encrypt their photos, their financial documents, and they'd try to get the victim to pay a couple hundred dollars to get access to those photos back. What happened and what was really the game changer was Bitcoin. With the ability of a virtual currency, now these victims can say, or the subjects can demand, outrageous sums of money, not just a couple hundred dollars. And that was the real game changer. And then as we talked about before, as the amount of payments went up from thousands to tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands, more and more criminals became involved. And now you've got these, it's not just an individual sitting somewhere overseas. It's criminal organizations. These are large groups of people. They have HR departments. They have office space. I mean, they're making hundreds of millions and billions of dollars a year. And they run their operation like a real company.
And they probably have, offices that people, legitimate companies, are moved in next door to. One of the things that I heard recently, or I saw on the news, was that Montana has had a rash of ransomware problems. And I think that's one of the things I'd really like to make sure that we get out there, because a lot of times people from small population states don't think that they get involved in the things that big cities do.
Yeah, that's 100% true. I mean, we see it throughout Utah, Idaho, and Montana. We have victims in Montana every single week, multiple victims per week. And it's all different types and sizes of organizations. It's, it's police departments, it's city governments. There was a dental practice. I mean, there's all sorts of companies that have been hit in Montana. The criminals don't care where you're located, right? They're just looking for someone who's going to pay. They're looking, if they can get access to a network and get some money out of it, they'll go for it. They don't care whether it's Montana, Florida, California, wherever, big city, small city, it doesn't matter.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that they have these criminal organizations large. They have HR departments. As Al was saying, you're probably walking by them. They might have Halloween decorations up in the windows and the copy boy or the ink delivery on a regular basis. I don't know. Because then they're centrally located. How do you shut down something like that? I guess I'm really curious about the technology that is going to need to be developed to continue to fight this kind of crime.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things that need to come together to be able to have an impact here. We talked about international law enforcement cooperation. On the technical side, our adversaries, the subjects, the individuals who are carrying out these crimes are incredibly sophisticated and technical. They know the vulnerabilities in the applications and the software and the operating systems we use. So now that the ransomware has come to the forefront, it's really, the government and law enforcement working with our private industry partners to make sure that, our systems are secure, we're updating things, we're patching things, that we're talking to the public in order to get them to update their operating systems and the applications that they're using, and raising that awareness, which is what we're doing here today. That's really our best defense against a lot of this.
We're going to do more on raising awareness and more to come here as we are on Fraud Watch Friday, cybersecurity, because it is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and it is so important to be aware and continue to be reminded of how important it is. We're going to talk about what some of these things that we can do from a consumer standpoint as well, but let's not forget that when a ransomware demands $8 million from a commodity company or from a pipeline company, those costs do get transferred to us at the consumer level. Very important FBI Special Agent Casey Harrington with us, Al Ward, AARP Montana in studio. Let's grab some headlines with Brian Bennett. Fascinating when we start talking, trying to understand all the avenues that you need to protect yourself from. Cybersecurity, it's AARP's Fraud Watch Friday. Al Ward in studio. I'm Tom Schultz. And Special Agent Casey Harrington is with us from the FBI and a supervisor of the Cyber Task Force in the Salt Lake City office. Thank you again, Casey, for being here. It really is for me, interesting and eye-opening and fascinating stuff here. I'm curious about the kind of technology that we need to develop then when it comes to protecting ourselves. And I'm thinking on this large scale because that all trickles down to us.
Yeah, I mean, there's unfortunately no silver bullet. And if I knew, you know, what technology needed to be developed, you know, I'd be investing in that.
You'd be ahead on that.
It's more of just a lot of pieces coming together and the public and the private companies and the government working together to do their part. Certainly, we've seen an increase with companies doing a better job of being able to filter out some of these spear phishing emails. I mean, the number one way we see these criminals getting access to networks is phishing or spear phishing emails. And organizations and companies have gotten better. There's been better solutions developed to filter out some of these messages. You know, you'll see a lot of times now when you're emailing with someone, there'll be a big header on the email says, you know, this is coming from outside your organization. And when in companies we talk to, they're doing a lot more spear phishing tests to identify employees that are clicking on things they shouldn't be. We've even talked with companies in our area that they do these spear phishing tests for their employees, and you know, the first time you click on one, you have to take some training. The second time you click on one, you have to meet with an HR person. And the third time you click on one, you're fired because it's that big of a risk that you are letting people into the network. If you can't identify these emails and take the right actions, you're letting criminals into the network and you're a risk to the company. So you know, there are companies out there that are taking this very, very seriously, and they should.
Point well taken. Have we had, I guess collectively, the good guys versus the bad guys, had any huge wins, so to speak? Have we hit them hard in a couple of places where they may be thinking twice about their criminal careers?
So we've definitely had some successes. We've been able, to take some things down on the dark market. There's a lot of places where these criminals come together to sell access to compromised networks or trade information or trade stolen information. And we've been able to take away their ability to do some of that. Earlier this year, you know, when the Colonial Pipeline got hit, you know, the government kind of reprioritized, and we're working, you know, now at a much higher level with a lot of our federal government partners and our international partners to really focus on this. And like you said, have an impact on these guys and make sure that, this is an attractive type of crime for them to do.
And I also read recently too that there was actually some of the genie put back in the bottle when it came to that Colonial Pipeline, where some of that money was actually recovered.
That's right. Yeah. So that was a good win for us to be able to get some of that money back. Not something we're able to do every single time. That was just kind of an opportunity that presented itself, but nonetheless, it shows the criminals that we do have some of those capabilities.
All right, we're going to come back after a short break here, start talking about data breaches and the business email compromises, as you had talked about, the malware and the scareware. You mentioned phishing, there's spoofing, also just a number of things to be aware of here as we fight cybersecurity. We're not going to let the internet beat us. It will be our friend, Casey Harrington, Al Ward, Tom Schultz on Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today. Two decades strong, working on three. Thank you for making us a part of your Montana mornings for all that. And we're doing the best we can to live up to that. Newsmakers here and an objective perspective. And we sincerely hope that you and all your family are well. Again, thanks. Tom Schultz alongside here. It's Fraud Watch Friday. Al Ward is in the studio, AARP's state president, and also just a fascinating discussion topic today as we look at cybersecurity. October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. We have FBI Special Agent Casey Harrington on the line here, current supervisor of the Cyber Task Force in the FBI Salt Lake City office, which has jurisdiction over Utah, Idaho, and Montana. There's a couple of stories. We want to get right into this, Casey. Again, thank you for being here. Al Ward has something he wanted to share about a real life, and then I've got a real life case as well, and that just makes me, well, I'm done running scared. I may not be done running stupid, though. So I do need to educate myself on this. But Al, go ahead.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening. One of the things that I see a lot of anymore are emails asking for payment for something that you didn't buy. And it either came from, you know, like a company like Amazon, or it came from an individual. But as soon as I see it, I know that it's bogus. And so I erase those. However, and I haven't been able to find it. Maybe somebody has that.
Let me relate that story and have Casey respond. I recently paid, and I do pay my bills online. I find that to be so convenient. And I have, protections on my computer as well. But this was very curious. I paid a bill online to a major company, a national company, and it wasn't long after that, within 24 hours, that I got a text message to my phone from that company that noted, thank you for paying your bill online. Now click here to pick up your rewards. There was no reward mention in me paying my bill. Does that indicate how deep this issue can be?
Well, some of it is just a coincidence, right? I mean, it may have, you know, just been a coincidence that you got that text message right after it, you know, or
okay.
It could be that they have access to something that shows a customer list, right? If it's a big corporation and there may have been a data breach years ago that says, you know, and they were able to obtain a list of all the customers for that company, you know, they can figure out and tie phone numbers to customers, and now they've got a really good target base to do these types of scams. So it kind of just depends, but we've definitely seen an increase in the number of text messaging scams. They call it smishing. Where they're you know, so many people are using smartphones now and things are done through text, and so that's just another vector for them to be able to get you to click on something you shouldn't be clicking on. A lot of times in these text messages, the links are much smaller and shortened, so you can't really see what you're clicking on, and you know, before you know it, you're at a bad site entering information that you shouldn't be. So you know, they're always going to, the criminals are always going to kind of navigate to the newest trends and whatever, again, brings them, you know, the most money.
Well, I know if you get an email that you think is spam, you can forward it to spam@uce.gov for the Federal Trade Commission. Can you do that with text messages?
I don't think they have it set up yet for text messages. It's probably something that's coming along because we've seen, as I mentioned, you know, such an increase in that. But I don't think there's the same thing. And you know, most of those, you know, it goes to the same kind of thing that we see with email. If you're not expecting it, if it's not a company that you normally deal with, you know, a lot of these that I get even on my phone, you know, it says, oh, you know, Amazon's dropping off a package, click here, or, you know, UPS, you know, if you're not expecting it, if you don't know about it, don't click on it. It's the same things for emails.
Let's go down this list a little bit. FBI Special Agent Casey Harrington is with us here, Al Ward in studio, and I'm Tom Schultz here, Fraud Watch Friday, cybersecurity. How to protect your computer. And as I mentioned, I referenced this list earlier, is from the FBI website, FBI.gov, and just do a regular search, but there's an address here, scams and safety/on the internet. What are some of those key things that we need to be reminded of and not be lazy about at home?
Well, you know, we certainly, you know, want people to make sure they're updating and installing, you know, antivirus software and firewalls and, you know, updating patches as they come out. You know, these things, there's a reason these things are pushed out, and it's to protect your computer. The you know, whether it's Microsoft or Apple or whoever, you know, they're identifying vulnerabilities and they're pushing out updates regularly to make sure that everyone is protected against these vulnerabilities. So we want people to to make sure that they install those. That's one key piece. You know, another piece of it is just, you know, making sure you're, you know, we call it cyber hygiene. I mean, you know, good cyber practices, and it's the same things we've been talking about for years. I mean, it's not much has changed, but, you know, the big ones I try to hit on, because I know it gets complicated and we throw 10 or 12 things at people. So I try to just highlight one or two is make sure you use different passwords. You know, we all have dozens, hundreds of passwords that we have to manage these days, but make sure they're different across these websites, because what we see is criminals will get your username and password to one site, and now they can move to a whole bunch of other sites if they're the same password and use those to get in there. So use different passwords and use two-factor authentication. So that's, you know, maybe getting a text message or whatever it is. Use two-factor authentication everywhere you can. And then really just be very safe and cautious with your email and text messages, what you're clicking on, and you know, what information you're providing. Make sure it's legitimate.
Yeah, one of these comments here from this tip sheet is how to protect your computer. The same advice parents might deliver to young drivers: don't drive in bad neighborhoods. that one stands alone. Do we need to turn our computers off nowadays? When we first started getting computers, we were said, "Well, you can leave them on. It's better if they so they will automatically update." But has that advice changed?
Yeah, I think, I mean, if you leave it on all the time, you're more susceptible to an attack. You know, so you might as well turn it off if you're not using it, or unplug your Ethernet cord, or turn off the Wi-Fi access, and then no one has access to your computer outside your house. But if you're plugged in, you're vulnerable. So the less you're plugged in, the less time you're connected, the better.
Thank you for that. Casey Harrington, FBI Special Agent. Again, Al Ward. Al, you and I were talking about how people are leaving their computers on. And in fact, I think you were talking about how it relates now to cryptocurrency.
One of the things that I got from my security software package is they have a newsletter that goes out. And this was something that I wanted to ask the special agent about. They were talking about how people actually go into your computer to generate cryptocurrency on your computer. And they talked about some of the things that you might check, like if you have your computer slows down or you end up with a lot more power consumption. Is that something that you've heard about?
Yeah, we've certainly heard about that. I mean, these criminals are, you know, there's a lot of different ways to use a compromised computer, right? There's ransomware. You know, they can use them as bots for DDoS attacks. They can use them to mine cryptocurrency, as you mentioned. You know, so the different groups have different goals. And certainly, you know, mining cryptocurrency, if they can use, you know, 1,000, 10,000 computers out there to mine cryptocurrency, that's beneficial to them. So that's another risk, and that's another reason not to leave your computer on and plugged in all the time.
All right. It sounds like you might know something about cryptocurrency, and I've read about it and looked at it, and it blows my mind still don't understand it. What is cryptocurrency?
Yeah, it's certainly a confusing topic. There's no doubt about that, but just like ransomware, it's really come to the forefront the last few years. I mean, it's just a virtual kind of payment system. I mean, there's nothing really behind it. There's no gold behind it or anything like that. It's just a virtual currency. You know, it started with Bitcoin, and now there are literally thousands or maybe tens of thousands of different variations. You know, a lot of what we read about is people trying to invest in it and hope that, you know, that the value of it goes up or down. And unlike other kind of more stable currencies, there can be huge fluctuations, you know, day by day, hour by hour. So it's a very risky investment, but it is a somewhat anonymous way to exchange money. And so there's no central bank involved. A lot of these don't go through legitimate exchanges. So there's no real subscriber information or customer information or account information associated with these transactions. And so they are somewhat anonymous, and the criminals have kind of seized on that and a big part of what they do.
We're going to come on back. One thing we haven't talked about, and we should a little bit more, and we'll update these things again about keeping your firewall turned on, updating your antivirus software. But How to use social media wisely. I think that's another aspect of this that can get us in trouble. FBI Special Agent Casey Harrington is with us, supervisor of the Cyber Task Force, FBI Salt Lake City office, and former lawman himself, Al Ward, now president of AARP Montana, as it's Fraud Watch Friday. Cybersecurity. Again, don't let the internet beat you. Back with more of Voices in a bit.
This is Shane from Western Ranch Supply, and your dog safety is important, which is why we are confident that our Prefer dog kennels are perfect for giving peace of mind to both you and your dog. Prefer dog kennels are strong and durable, yet attractive. No tools are required for assembly, and you can easily attach an optional top or sunshade. Stop in and see our Prefer dog kennel.
Serving the big country, Western Ranch Supply.
I want to make sure you guys know about this as well, AARP Montana. They've got a nice list here that you can access on their website, important consumer protection contact information for Montana. We've referred to it in the past, the Montana Department of Justice, the Adult Protective Services, things like that, the state auditor, the local taxpayer advocate. The FBI Internet Crime Complaint Center is on here as well. It's IC3, the letter I, the letter C, the number 3, .gov as we look at cybersecurity. It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month, October, and welcome to it. FBI Special Agent Casey Harrington, Al Ward's in studio. I'm Tom Schultz. I kind of want to get to some of these things that maybe we've left off the plate here, but using social media wisely. Anytime I use social media, I don't think I'm doing it wisely.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad things that come from social media. People put pictures out there that reveal a lot about themselves. But, from the cyber perspective, what we see a lot is, people have LinkedIn accounts and they put their full resume out there. They put, email addresses, contact information, where they've lived. I mean, everything on there. And that's, a perfect, kind of springboard for a criminal to look at that and say, okay, well, I can easily craft an email to this person and get them to click on something, right? When you put all that out there, you're really kind of revealing yourself and opening yourself up and making yourself a target. So, we try to make sure that people are smart about what they're putting out there and at least know the risks about putting that information out there.
It's almost an oxymoron. Use social media wisely. What about handling online banking securely?
Yeah, I mean, that's another big one. It's another vulnerability. Again, the more you interact, the more you do things online, the more vulnerabilities you're opening up. What we see is a lot of, fake or fraudulent websites that look like a Bank of America website or look like a Wells Fargo website. You have to be very sure about, where you're going, where you're entering your information, how you're connecting to the internet, whether it's Wi-Fi or trusted network. Each of these things, they're very convenient, as we talked about before, paying bills online, but there's also some risks involved. We want to make sure that people are aware of what those risks are.
One of the other things I think that goes along with that is be careful, when you're using a hotel website or a restaurant website or whatever. Number one, that you know that you're going to the right website. Make sure that you talk to somebody that's in staff to make sure that you have the right website. But also make sure if you're doing anything that has financial stuff to it, it has to be secure.
I want to throw in with that one of these tips here, and it's related, turn off your Bluetooth when not in use.
Yeah, a similar thing as we're talking about connecting to Wi-Fi networks. If you've got your Bluetooth available, that again, it's just another vector where these guys can access your phone, your computer, whatever it is. So if you're not using it, turn it off. Same with Wi-Fi. You want to, kind of like we talked about before in terms of turning your computer off. If you have your computer on and it's plugged in and it's open, you're at risk. But if you've got Wi-Fi turned off, Bluetooth turned off, the computer turned off, you don't really have those risks. So it's just, it's all about risk management when you use these devices.
Well, I'm going to say this. Get all the bad guys, then quit your job and be a fishing guide. Okay, Casey?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I know. I know you're working hard. I appreciate the information. Again, as I mentioned, some of those contact numbers, but FBI specifically is IC3.gov. They've got a good tip sheet. AARP Montana has a good tip sheet, and there's just a lot of numbers. And we have to be vigilant about it. It's just our part that we can do so that we can protect ourselves and others can help us in that. Al Ward, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, Casey, good job. Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And thanks to AARP Montana as well. I'm Tom Schultz. I'll thank Eric Young, our in-studio engineer. It is a Friday, only two more working days this week. Oh, no, just kidding. You get out there and you have a super weekend.